Good morning and welcome to Focus on Health, the weekly radio program where we talk about all the great things happening at Van Deest Medical Center. I'm your host, Lori Foster, and today we're going to hear from one of our providers, Jade Williams. Before we do, I have a couple of brief announcements I'd like to share. First, I'd like to welcome Dr. Anasuya Abraham, General Surgeon, to our team at Van Deest Medical Center. Dr. Abraham performs minimally invasive surgery, treating diseases of the intestinal tract, performing colonoscopy, upper endoscopy, laparoscopic and open hernia surgery, melanoma surgery, thyroid surgery, lymph node biopsy, and chemotherapy port placements. She is now seeing patients. For more information or to schedule an appointment, you can call 832-7746. Secondly, Van Deest Medical Center Auxiliary once again is offering four $1,000 scholarships to students entering the healthcare profession. The new application can be found online. Go to our website at www.vandeestmc.org. The deadline to submit the application is April 15th of this year. And with that, I want to save plenty of time to start into our program. Today we are joined, as I mentioned, by one of our providers, family practice gerontologist Jade Williams, who oversees our skilled care program at the hospital. However, this time, she joins us from the other side of healthcare, as a patient, going through her journey prior to and leading up to her diagnosis of ovarian cancer. I want to thank Jade for offering to share her story, for being so open, so vulnerable, displaying such strength and courage. Now, here's Jade.
So, like, my situation really started actually in December of 2022. So I had been working with a trainer for 2 years, and we were gearing up for like a new challenge because I was just kind of, I felt stagnant. Like I was just religiously lifting, you know, 3 to 5 days a week. And I was doing a little bit of cardio here and there, but I really wasn't doing anything. Like I needed a goal. I'm just the type that I have to have like some type of goal I'm like working towards. And that's typical when you're lifting weights. And I know that sounds kind of silly, but I mean, you have goals, you know, like to increase your weight or, you know, different things like that, maybe do more advanced lifting. But like, I just needed something that I could be like every day checking off and be like, and this is where I made it at the end, you know, of this time. So it was December of 2022, right at the end of the month. I'm a little bit type A, didn't realize that until this situation, but so we have an app with the trainer that we use, and then you have like your health app on your phone because I use an iPhone. So it's an Apple product. And, you know, you track everything on there, and it also tracks things for you. Like one thing being a VO2 max, which I won't delve heavily into, but it just kind of identifies where you're at cardio fitness wise, essentially. And the month of December, mine took a huge like nosedive, and I didn't really know why. Like it went from being in the upper 30s, like 34 to 38 on a regular day or, you know, week if I was working out, to like in the 20s, which is not good. Anything 22 or below really says that there's something like major going on with you. And, you know, and I was like, maybe I just have like a glitch in my watch sensor. Maybe I need to get a new watch. I did like a reset, all this stuff, and it wasn't changing. And I was really tired. And I was telling my trainer, and I would tell Ryan, my husband, like, I am just so tired all the time. And I was increasing my caffeine. So I would drink coffee in the morning. I drank like a monster in the afternoon. I was taking a pre-workout. So I was taking almost 600 milligrams some days, 400, 600 milligrams of caffeine, which is a lot. And I was working, and I like couldn't get through the day. I'd come home and I just like, you know, be so exhausted. So it turned out the end of December, so like the VO2 started taking a dip in the middle of the month, and I did not have COVID. I got COVID at the end of the month, which was coincidental. And I was just like, I can't I can't accept this, that I'm going to, like, just be this lazy bum anymore. So we decided we were going to train for our first half marathon. So, like, January 1, while I had COVID, I started training for the half marathon. And I was like, you know, because if you get your body up and moving, you usually feel better. And lifting weights was taking way too much effort. And I'm like, I'm just going to cut back and lift 3 days a week, lighter weights, because really now my focus is just kicking this half marathon that we decided was in March down in Des Moines. So as soon as I started training, I began to experience like lower back pain, and it was primarily on the left side. And I thought maybe I just had tweaked my back from lifting or from the running, because just the pounding on the treadmill, and that's how I started training. Can be brutal. And so I got two new pairs of running shoes, was like alternating, doing all the things that they tell you to do. And then I started having serious, like spotting. And at first it just started twice a week. And then from there it was like just progressing, but my actual menstrual cycle stayed on course. So it didn't matter how much spotting I was having, I would still have a regular cycle. And I was like, well, this is so weird, and talked to my trainer about it. And, you know, we both decided I had a reason for all the things that was happening. And it wasn't like I was dropping weight or anything, but the once you change or stress your body, sometimes in a new way, especially for women, we can experience like the spotting, we get hip pain and different things like that. And I was like, you know what? I had two pregnancies. The last one was very difficult. I developed a uterine prolapse while I was pregnant. And so I just chalked it up to a poor core and a weak pelvic floor, and I just needed to work harder. So I started increasing like my core workout and my legs and, that type of thing. And then we get into March, we go down and we run the race. And by that time I had gained like over 5 pounds from when I had started, which I thought was bizarre, because I was running at one point over 20 miles a week training for this race and lifting. And I've been on a consistent calorie macro, is what we call it, a macro calorie count, where I track everything that I eat, and I have a specific amount of protein I'm taking in, and carbs and fat. And so to not have that number move for those 3 months, and then to be gaining weight, I was like, what is happening, you know? And so my trainer and I, we talked about it again, and she was like, well, you know, if you're stressing your body sometimes will be resistant and it'll hold on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you're lean and you're tall. And so that could be the reason. But, you know, she's like, if it keeps happening, you know, you need to probably go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I didn't, because why would I do that?
Were you still as tired? Like, when you were in like the majority of your training?
So it got better, actually, the fatigue, but that was probably because, or it could have also been because I developed a mindset. Like, if I can knock out a 2-hour run, then I can like do anything else. Mm-hmm. And I'd convinced myself, because I was getting up at like 4:30 in the morning, running for 2 hours, and then I'd come in to work and do my job, and then I'd go home and take care of the girls and, you know, family and all those other things. And so I was maybe getting 6 hours of sleep at night and was just doing that. That was like my cycle. And so then when we finished that race, I was like, okay, well, we talked about it, and I had to cut back on activity for like 2 weeks. And that was just the recommendation. Like, when you finish running a race, your body's so taxed from all of that, you need to really taper back. Well, and then we anticipated to see maybe a little bit of normalization with my weight at that point. So that took us to like the end of March. And the weight never did. It just stayed like right around where it was. And then I started feeling like I was bloated all the time. And So once again, I went back to the drawing board and increased my fiber intake instead of having, you know, really reevaluating maybe what was going on. And so then I started consuming like 30 grams, 35 grams of protein, which is a high amount. I increased my water intake to well over 100 ounces a day, which was my baseline, was around 80 to 100 a day. So I went over 100 ounces a day religiously. I had to start taking stool softeners because the fiber, in my opinion, caused the constipation. So I basically had just willed away all five primary symptoms that you were to be looking for ovarian cancer. And those are the bloating, the pain, the constipation, urination, and then usually you start to experience issues with eating. But I couldn't tell if I was having problems because I had numbers I was trying to meet every day. So I was forcing myself to eat, whether mm-hmm. I was hungry or not. And it might not have always been things that I enjoyed eating, but I was eating because I had these macros that I had to meet. So next thing I know, the spotting was getting worse. And then I started to experience the issues with the urination, where it was just like I'd be in rounding on a patient and I'd have to leave the room because I was going to, uncontrollably pee my pants. Like mm-hmm. it was, you know, it would be terrible. Or we'd be in the middle of rounds and I'd be like, I have to go to the bathroom. Like, can we just wait a minute and then I'll meet you guys in there, or, you know, something like that. So that's, you know, I don't like making people wait on me, and I don't, everybody's time is just as important as mine. So for my team to have to be waiting around, you know, for all these frequent bathroom breaks and all of that, that was frustrating as well to me. But I willed that issue away because I was constipated. And I was like, oh, well, constipation causes issues with urinary frequency. So there's literally nothing I need to be worried about at this point. And then it had to have been May by that point. And we were planning a trip to go to Florida for 2 weeks in June. We were taking the girls to Disney, and then we were meeting my parents down in Florida for the second week. And out of nowhere, my health app on my phone sent me an alert telling me that these symptoms that I had been documenting, because these are all things you can document in your health app, were concerning, and I needed to make an appointment with a physician or a provider. And then it provided a PDF of all these symptoms that I'd been tracking from December until that point in May. And it was exportable, so you could click on it and you could export it and print it off. And it said that it would recommend you take this to your provider to have them analyze these graphs and look at all these things that I had been charting. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is crazy. One, I didn't know that the health app was able to function that way, but I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm not like endorsed by Apple products, but I do have to like really put a plug in for this because this is amazing. And honestly, like I said, I, being a provider myself, had willed away every single symptom I was experiencing. And my phone is the one thing that was telling me like, no, you need to go get this checked out. So I talked to my husband about it, and then it made me concerned because then I knew there was something. I just had this feeling that there was obviously something there. And we went to Florida for our vacation. And while we were there, I remember lifting weights at one of the hotels. It was in Clearwater in the gym. And it was just like a light upper body workout. And as soon as I finished that, I just had this terrible amount of spotting. And I was wearing white shorts. And it couldn't have been more embarrassing, you know, of a situation to be in. And so I told him, I came downstairs and I was like, I got to make an appointment when we get back. And so that's what I did. So we got back and I made an appointment with Iowa Specialty or Gabrielson Clinic with Valerie Martin, who's a nurse practitioner there that specializes in abnormal issues and surrounds perimenopause and menopause and things like that. She was able to see me in July. We talked about the symptoms I was having, and she said, you know, it's possible, because my mom was young when she went started menopause, she was 35, that I was maybe experiencing some of those situations, but we really wouldn't know until we did some testing. And because I was over 35, there was a specific subset of tests that they have to do for you to rule out things like a mass or uterine cancer or different things like that. So we scheduled that appointment. Unfortunately, it wasn't till like towards the end of August because of how it lined up with the type of staff that they had to have in the clinic and all of that. So I was like around the 24th, I think, of August. I went in and we did a abdominal ultrasound, a like an intravaginal ultrasound, a uterine biopsy, and some blood work that day. And we, as soon as they did the abdominal ultrasound, it was fine. We didn't, the tech and I had been chatting, you know, really wasn't anything concerning or, you know, at that point. And then we moved to the intravaginal, and that's when, I mean, I just felt her demeanor change. She asked how old my children were. And for those of you who've had an intravaginal ultrasound, you can't really see what's happening on the screen because of the position you're in. But I just remember trying to, like, look up and see what it was that she was seeing. And when I looked up, you could just see my right ovary was literally just like broken open and just like spilling out the stuff. There was a bunch of fluid, and then we moved over to the left ovary, and there was just this concentric mass, like, and I thought it was the ovary at that time. And it just, I just was like, oh my gosh, like, this is obviously something terrible. That's all he kept saying to myself. And we finished the exam, and she asked me to put this blanket, basically, like, wrap myself up and go next door to the exam room. Like, I didn't change nothing. I just got up off the table, went into the exam room, and immediately I did the one thing that we tell every patient not to do. Started Googling ovarian mass. Like, what does this mean? And I'm looking at pictures, and I'm trying to find which one looked like what I seen on the screen. And Valerie came walking in, and we just both kind of looked at each other, and I started crying, and I asked her if she thought it was cancer. And she said, well, you know, definitively, we can't make that decision. She's like, you have a really large amount of fluid in your pelvic area, which is concerning. And then she said, do you have any pain? And I said, yeah, I'm in pain all the time. My left leg goes numb. I just do all these things. I said, but I lift weights and I run. And I said, I'm constantly feeling like I have to stretch out my back. And it actually about this time had gotten to the point where I had emailed Lisa Ridge, my boss, telling her I needed a new office chair because my office chair I had was wreaking havoc on my back. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Lisa, she complied. She's like, well, what kind do you want? What do we need to do? All those things. And then it really just turned out it didn't matter what office chair I had because it wasn't going to make the problem any better. yeah, so then when I left the appointment that day, Valerie decided she was going to tack on what we call a CA-125. And I knew right there that her suspicion was elevated, that there was a mass, because this is a marker that we check specifically for ovarian cancer in women. But, you know, I also was terrified, right? And so I left the appointment, and I just remember calling my husband, crying, and he felt terrible that he wasn't there. And I said, well, how could you have known, like, that just some routine examinations and diagnostics was going to turn into, you know, potentially dealing with a cancer, you know? And so that weekend. I also did the next thing we tell every patient not to do, and I checked my portal religiously till I found out what the radiologist thought my reports looked like and needed to know. And then I kept refreshing until that CA-125 came back, and it came back fine. It was like a 35, which is by standard not really indicative at all. It's just barely over or at the basic upper limit is what we would say for a CA-125. Usually if you have a active ovarian, that number might be 100 or 200, or we also can use it as a guideline on how well the cancer is taking the chemo treatment, because mm-hmm. you can kind of watch that number and recheck it intermittently, and you want it to trend down. So I left that weekend without really any answers, other than the radiologist thought it was suspicious and had discussed how, you know, all the additional fluid that was in my pelvis and things like that. And so the clinic, of course, called me the following week once they had everything and said that I needed to come in. But unfortunately, I wouldn't be meeting with Valerie. I would be meeting with one of their gynecologists, which was Dr. McIntyre. And she was going to go over my results with me. And so that's always concerning when you go moving from, I know sometimes people don't like the term, but the mid-level mm-hmm. to a physician. You know, it's always concerning. So Ryan did come with me to that appointment. That would have been in early September. And she, I'll probably start crying. So she reviewed the results, and she didn't want to discuss if she felt it was cancer or not. She said, you know, typically I would remove this mass myself. She's like, but I just feel like in your case, I need to refer you or have a discussion with a gynecological oncologist. And she said, typically, you know, I refer to Dr. Elge, who at the time I had no idea who he was, because I don't specialize in women's health. It's not my forte. So we left that appointment at 1 o'clock, and she said she was reaching out to him. And by 3:30, they called me and said that he said if there was any suspicion or concern that he wanted to meet with me the following week. And so we went down and then met with him. And he reviewed everything, and he said, you know, even though you're a provider, I'm going to treat you just like I would any of my other patient. He's like, I'm not going to give you more information than you need, and I'm not going to withhold any information. He said, but ultimately we have to remove it to know even what we're dealing with, because just based off of the ultrasound, you know, we know there's a mass, but it could be completely benign. It could be nothing, or it could end up being something. And we really wouldn't even know what that something is until we send it off to pathology. So we decided then that surgery was the next option. And I had also decided at that point that summer, with everything going on, that I was going to start training again for another half marathon. So I was in the middle of training for that in September, and our half marathon was scheduled for October 15th. And I knew what it meant if I had surgery, that it was going to keep me from being active, and not just for a short period of time, but like we're talking 6 to 8 weeks just from the initial surgery. And if for some reason it came back concerning, there would have to be another surgery. So I was adamant that I was going to be able to finish this race, and then I would do the surgery. And he obliged. He was not really thrilled about it, but he said ultimately, at this point, we were looking at a surgery around the middle of October based off of his schedule. And he said, you know, it's not going to push you back more than a couple weeks. I think we can honor that. So I ran the race on the 15th, and it was just like a good feeling to be able to do that. And then when I finished the race, the pain in my left leg was so severe I couldn't walk. And they have, if you've never been at a race, they have it set up where they have like students and they have chiropractors and all this stuff on the other side of the finish line. And they saw me coming across and they were like, you can come over here and we'll like, we'll try and stretch you out and like all that. And I was like, no, it's fine. I just want to like try and walk it off, get back to my hotel, and then we'll like come back down, hopefully, was my goal. But at that point I didn't really know because it hurt so bad. And so I like had to tippy toe walk back to our hotel, you know, and it's just funny. And I'm just lucky that I was able to actually finish the race because, you know, it was pretty bad. And so we finished the race and it was great. And then my trainer, who I was still working with, you know, she told me I really should probably ease off of the working out as is recommended after a race. But I was like, no, I'm not, because I know come October, the original surgery was scheduled for October 25th. I know after that I can't do it, like anything except for walk. So I continued to run. I continued to lift weights. And I even lifted weights the day of surgery, which was terrible because you're fasting and you can't drink anything in the morning. So when I got there to surgery, you know, they couldn't, it took like 5 times for them to even get an IV because I was so dehydrated. But it also felt good just to know like that I knocked off a workout the last day, and whatever comes, like mentally, I needed it for my mental state. I needed to be able to just get in there, do something that I enjoy doing, and, you know, go from there. So so then I just remember, you know, going back to surgery. And the surgery that day just kept getting pushed back and pushed back because he is just the best gynec in the state of Iowa. And he gets into surgery and he's very thorough and he does, you know, what he needs to do for each patient. But that then means that the following case could get pushed out a little bit. So they took me back and I just remember getting back into the OR and they had to wheel me back in a wheelchair and I got on the table and I started crying and they're like, the ladies were so great back there in the OR and they said, you know, this isn't uncommon. A lot of women cry, unfortunately, when they get back here to this point. And I had an anesthesiologist who is a female. And so she just started talking to me and they had some music going and she said that she was going to just kind of give me something to relax. And then before I knew it, I'd wake up and the surgery would be over and everything. And she was right. You know, next thing I knew, I woke up and I was in recovery and like this level of pain that I never thought that I was going to experience. And Dr. Elge came in and they started pulling the curtains and they were like, where's her husband? That's all they kept saying. And Dr. Elge said that he had already visited with Ryan and he wanted him back there. And so they were like getting Ryan to come back and he just grabbed my hand and he's like, your husband's a wreck. And I was like, you know, what are you telling me? And he said, it's cancer. And he said, I'm so sorry. And then he may have said more, but at that point, I don't really know because it was very dreamy. And they gave me so much, you know, pain medication. I was like, I really don't know the amount of time that elapsed from me waking up and him coming back there. It all seemed to happen very fast, but I really don't know. And so then the next thing you know, Ryan was standing there and he was crying and we were both crying and, he started to tell me that Dr. Elge was hoping, or he was optimistic, that it was going to be germ cell. And so we held on to that and was very hopeful that that's what it was going to be. And so kind of what that means is the ovary is, there's really 4 layers, but we kind of classify it as 3. So you have like your outside epithelial Then you have like this like connective tissue, and then you have essentially like the inner core of the ovary. And so each area can have its own type of cancer, basically. And so the germ cell would be on the outside as well as epithelial cancer. And so unfortunately, mine was not germ cell, which would have been have the surgery, take out the ovary and the mass, and you're done with germ cell. But mine is a subtype of epithelial. It's called clear cell carcinoma. So it is aggressive, and it's on the outside of the ovary, which makes it bad because then it's sharing its cancer cells with every other tissue that it comes into contact with. You know, and like a good analogy that we have used is that, you know, you have cancer and it's in one spot, but it's just kind of like going to the airport. That cancer is hanging out at the airport, but it has an intention to go or can go somewhere else. And it's just a matter of time. When is it going to get on that plane and like take off? So mine, we checked the fluid that was in my pelvis then at that time, and it came back suspicious. And so then that's what made it even more concerning, was that it was on the outside of the ovary and then it's in your pelvic washings. So whatever was touching the pelvic fluid has now been exposed to this aggressive subtype of cancer.
Thank you to Jade, and thank you for tuning in for part one. Join us next week on Focus on Health to hear more from Jade Williams about her journey. That will do it for today's edition of Focus on Health, brought to you by Van Deest Medical Center, where our focus is you.